Hello, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to the Design and Marketing Podcast with Rob Cubbon. I hope you're very well. Today we have an excellent guest on the show for you. John Romaine from Australia, from webdesignbusinesskits.com. John has been in the business for a long, long time. We had a great chat. It's full of value. It's full of lots of takeaways. I learned a lot right from the beginning all the way to the end. We talk a lot about how John set up in the first place. So if you're interested in starting a web design business, this one's for you. But the whole of the interview is basically about running a web design business, and it's very interesting. Great sound quality this time. There's always something that happens, though, at podcast time. Last time, when I was speaking to Wes McDowell, I was talking from Brazil, and I had a fire outside my apartment building. He had a slightly smaller problem with gardeners outside his Californian condo. This time, I was speaking to John from London, and we have terrible snow and blizzard conditions here. And I had gritting trucks out the window, and John had temperatures of 46 degrees centigrade. I couldn't believe that. 46 degrees centigrade. I haven't even been in 40 degrees. 35 in Brazil was about as hot as it ever got. I can't imagine what that's like. John is, of course, was speaking from Sydney, and he's from the east coast of Australia. But anyway, that's enough rambling from me. Here's the interview. John Romaine, I hope you enjoy it. John, it's really nice to speak to you, man. Whereabouts are you from?
Yeah, I'm originally from Brisbane, but yeah. The beginning of 2011, I moved to Sydney. So I'm about 950 kilometres south of Brisbane. So, yeah.
And when you were in Brisbane, you had a job with the government, I believe.
Yeah, that's right. My background is IT, working for both state and local government. And I got into that in the late 90s, about 96, 97. I started with local government and was doing basic desktop support, server administration, networking, so wide area networks.
Right, so you had experience of very large scale IT operations, which is a background that is very different to mine, but then again, probably quite similar to some of my readers. What sort of skills did you get for yourself during the late 90s with those jobs?
Well, having a government job, being able to kick back and sleep under the desk, that was I hope my previous employers aren't listening to this podcast. No, look, having a government job, hey, you get exposure to so many different areas, fiddling around with some intranet stuff, web development and coding. All in all, I guess, just having that exposure to the technology and also getting a bit of an insight into user behaviour with the internet. It was a really good opportunity. I mean, before then, I was pushing a broom. I pushed a broom for 7 years. And then I guess I had one of those moments where I thought, you know, I really need to do something with my life.
A broom. You weren't literally sweeping up somewhere, were you?
Well, no, I was labouring.
Right.
Yeah. I left school and I partied hard for a good solid 10 years. But you know, I snapped out.
Okay, so you had manual jobs before you had government job then.
Yeah, I was labouring. And,
I hadn't heard the expression pushing a broom. That's a new one on me.
Well, you know, you're either pushing a pen or you're pushing a broom.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. That's obvious, really, when you think about it. But
I got out of that and I got myself to TAFE because I thought, you know, IT was just huge in the 90s. Everyone was getting to IT, and I figured that was the right direction for me because I enjoyed working with computers. So I got myself to TAFE, and then from there I ended up in a local government job.
We've got to talk about the big switch, basically. So, you know, how did you get where you are now from there? What was the first step to your running a web design business, basically?
Okay. Trying to think back where it all kind of came together. I was actually thinking about this before the podcast because I expected that question. I was with local government for 7 years, and during that time I was doing a lot of intranet development. So I was developing systems that staff were using internally, and I got a really big kick out of, you know, sitting down and putting something together and then seeing people use it as a tool. I really enjoyed that. And I'm talking about, you know, simple content management systems for logging jobs and, you know, using an Access database back end, and it was all written in ASP. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mean, but at the time it was, you know, I wouldn't say it was cutting edge, but it was something that I just really enjoyed doing.
And also, it's very easy to get it wrong and do it badly, isn't it? Even though it's not cutting edge now, but I mean, there's still a lot of bad internal systems out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was a starting point for me, and it's led to much bigger things. So it was a good learning experience. But the problem was, for me, Rob, was that even though I really enjoyed doing that and I was learning a lot, it wasn't my, what would you say, it wasn't my primary role. It wasn't something that I was meant to be doing. So I was finding myself really enjoying this intranet development and wanting to do more of it. But I just couldn't convince the managers that, you know, hey, this stuff can be really beneficial to our team. Instead, they wanted me to go and, you know, swap monitors and clean mouse balls. So I was really stuck between. I'm a creative person by nature, and I was really wanting to move in that direction. And I kind of got a little bit of opportunity in that area, but I had to, you know, at the same time I still had my job to do. So that's kind of where it started. And I found myself, because I couldn't do much of that internet stuff, well, couldn't do as much as I wanted at work, I was taking a lot of that home, and I started doing a lot of internet development at home. So
right.
I was actually, I think I, at the time I didn't have a laptop, so I was, you know, I was carrying a PC under my... I'd pack up my computer at work, carry it under my arm, get home, plug it in, and sit there till 2 or 3 in the morning, and, you know, and pack it up at night, climb into bed, have my 4 or 5 hours sleep, and then take it into work the next day and plug it in, and away I would go. And, you know, I just couldn't get enough of it.
I remember that feeling, actually, because I remember, you know, when you're doing something at 2 o'clock in the morning and you really love doing. You say to yourself, hold on a minute, I quite like this, you know, where's this going?
Yeah.
And I understand the frustration you had as well with your government job. I think a lot of people with not only government jobs, but any sort of corporate jobs, any sort of job with a large-ish organisation will immediately identify with what you were saying there.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's where I was. I was, you know, I was just so passionate about this web stuff, you know, and the internet stuff, but at the same time I was getting to work and I had all these people that annoy me. I can't log in, or my email account's not, you know, or my computer won't turn on, and I was really getting frustrated. So I guess that was kind of where I was for about a year before I left there. And I mean, in and amongst that, in and around that time, I started building websites, or just at least learning how to build websites. But again, it was all in my own time. Mm. It was, looking back, I mean, I was really not getting much sleep. I was just constantly either working on the internet stuff or building websites. To me, it was just something that I loved doing. In and around this time, I had a friend that threw a couple of books in my direction. And these are two books that I want to mention in this podcast. The first one was Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki.
Okay. Yeah.
And that's where I kind of started thinking, you know, maybe I could use this web stuff and start making a bit of money. But during that time, I also read another book by Robert Kiyosaki, which was The Cashflow Quadrant.
Okay.
Yeah, and these are two books that I highly recommend. You really need to read the first before you read the Cashflow Quadrant.
Well, I've read the first one, and I haven't read the second one, so
okay. There's
something on my to-do list.
Yeah, no, if you can. The Cashflow Quadrant was enough to sort of push me over the edge in terms of leaving my job. There may be listeners that are familiar with the book, but he talks about different quadrants and which quadrants you need to be in to become financially successful.
Right, okay.
And at that time, I mean, I was, I was in a new job. I was still frustrated in that I couldn't do this web stuff full time. To cut a long story short, I walked into work one day and I was 4 minutes late. I was 4 minutes late for work, Rob.
That's dreadful.
And I got the biggest revving for that. And I thought, you know what? I've had enough. I've had it. I'm going to go out on my own. And, I had all this. I'm a pretty motivated person. And when I make a decision, I like to just go. Because the way I see it is, there are probably a lot of people listening to this call as well that are still in their full time jobs and they're thinking, do I start this business? Like, what do I do? What could, what if this goes wrong? Am I going to make enough money? I just went for it. I mean, it was, in hindsight, it was pretty foolish, but it was that book, The Cashflow Quadrant, that triggered me, along with my manager kicking me in the behind for being 4 minutes late for work, which I couldn't believe, that, got me on my way.
Oh, that's great. I love to hear stories about that. Actually, I do actually love to hear stories like that. Whatever it is, whether it's somebody having a go at you for being 4 minutes late or just an upbuilding of terrible frustration at what you have to put up with. But when people go for it and make the jump, even when, they think that they maybe not be quite ready, but if you're going to do it, it's just better just to do it.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is the way I looked at it, Rob. And I want to really emphasise this point to your listeners because, as I said, a lot of them may still be at that point where they're not quite sure, there's that little bit of doubt. What's the worst thing that can happen? It doesn't work and you get another job.
Yep, exactly.
That was my mentality. You know what? I'm just going to do this to save my own sanity.
It's right. I mean, you could die tomorrow. I mean, you could get... any of us, we don't know what's happening in the future. We could get some terrible disease. You never know what's around the corner. You might as well live life, the life you want to live.
That's right. Absolutely.
And you make the world a better place because there's nothing worse than going around with a miserable look on your face because you're not happy what you're doing. And so you're sitting at home in your apartment having left your job for life.
I remember it quite well, Rob.
Yes, and you've done some web design work, but it probably wasn't as much money as you were used to. Well, what happened next?
Well, I was on about $85,000 a year,
right,
at my government job when I decided to quit, and I felt so empowered and I guess liberated when I walked out of that place. I thought, man.
Oh, that's
I've
great.
Done it, so many people. I mean, the day I started in that job, I sat beside a guy and I said, so how long have you worked here? And he said, I've been here 42 years. And I thought, oh, my God, no, please, someone save me. I thought, and this is the thing. You could be sitting in your cubicle for the next 50 years just waiting for the right time. Oh.
It's true. It is true. I mean, it'll get harder for people the longer they leave it as well. The longer they leave it, the more money they'll be earning.
That's right.
That's not to say there's a right time and a wrong time. There probably isn't. But
well, that's right. I mean, the right time is now. You've got to, if you're thinking about doing it, I mean, everyone already knows as to whether or not they're going to do it or not. But for me, I just thought, it's much like, you see some people, they go bungee jumping. And they get all suited up and they attach the cord and they get to the edge and they stand there and they look down and they hesitate and they start thinking it over. Man, I'm just like, give me that, suit up, attaching to that cord and I'm out of here.
Very good advice. If you're wondering when the right time is, the right time is now.
But just getting back to your question, what was it? What was I thinking? I was sitting at home and I'd quit my job.
Yeah.
The first thing that happened, Rob, was panic. I literally crapped my Dax because, during being a government job, they have a little, tea and scones farewell.
Right.
And I was giving my elevator speech. I'm going to start my own web design business. I've already got several clients lined up, and I'm looking at, at least getting to $15,000 a month. And then, the next day, I think I woke up, rolled out of bed. I sat on the edge of the bed and I thought, what the hell have I done? And, the reality of quitting my job soon kicked in. And it was as terrible as it felt, it was also exactly what I needed. Because I thought, this is serious. I got rent to pay, just as anyone else has. We got financial responsibilities. So as terrible as that felt, it was also exactly what I needed, because it prompted me to take action. There's an expression, what's that expression? When your back's against the wall, you'll do whatever it takes to make something happen. So that's where I was. I was like, what I did was pretty foolish. I just chucked my job because I just wanted out. So I didn't have anything in savings. I really didn't have a plan. I had nothing in place. So I guess the first thing I did was organize business cards. So I organized some business cards online. I didn't fuss over the minor details. I thought, I've got to get myself clients and I've got to get them fast to make this work. One thing that really drove me was the fear of having to go back to my old job. Yeah. I thought, oh my God, I couldn't imagine standing back at my old job in the tea room, having everyone crowded around saying, you idiot, we told you this wouldn't work. You didn't listen.
That's quite a big motivation.
Oh, yeah. Honest, isn't it? Absolutely. So, that was like, I cannot fail. This has to work. So I organized business cards online.
Yep.
Once I got those, that took like 2 or 3 days to arrive in the mail, and that cost me next to nothing. I chucked on my old business clothes, my old work clothes, sorry.
Yep, suit.
And I jumped in my car and I just went banging on doors. And I did that day after day after day just to find clients.
It's really interesting, actually, and I want to come to your products later, but I've read a lot of your stuff and we agree on a lot. And the one place where our sort of our experiences differ a great deal, and I think it's got a bit to do with when you were starting out and the state of the economy when you were starting out and everything, but I found all my clients online, whereas you went out and knocked on doors.
Yeah.
And it just goes to show you that there's no one way of doing things, and I can certainly vouch for the importance of meeting people face to face, because when you knocked on doors, you met people face to face. They put a face to the name. They saw your personality, and that's good. And you don't have that online. Online, you've just got a website, and you try and understand a personality, and you don't really know if you want to work with them or not. And so, it's all relevant. It's all relevant to my readers. That you did it in a completely different way to how I did it. It's just as relevant.
Well, I want to touch on that, especially Rob, because I don't know if you've noticed, but if you go to any, freelance forum or webmasters forum, you'll see a lot of people that start web design businesses, and they're trying to make it all happen from the comfort of, of their back bedroom.
Mm.
Obviously it worked for you, but I didn't have time to try and, to sit there and outbid people on Elance or post in... or posting job boards or classifieds, I thought, you know, I just wanted to...
Well, it would take you a long time to make any money on Elance as well.
Well, yeah, that's another story in itself, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I would have been building $15,000 websites for $120.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because
yeah.
you're competing with everyone in India and Manila. But for me, and I mean, this is something that's often overlooked. You know, and I can't stress this point enough, for people that are considering starting their own web design business, don't overlook local business. You know, I can take a 100-meter walk up the road and there's, you know, 300 local businesses, you know, right at my doorstep. You know, and I wasn't hard selling. I was just handing out business cards. I was saying, you know, hi, my name's John. I live in the area. I'm just out today in an effort to raise awareness about my web design business. Can I leave a card with you? And that was it. And I got clients every single time I did this.
That's amazing. That isn't amazing, you know. And I've just thought of another reason why this is so relevant to people is because I was freelancing. When I started my own business, I didn't do it on one day like you. I didn't have the bottle to do that. It took me 2 years because I was doing it for 2 years. I was free, so I was getting paid. I had these jobs in London where I would just go in for 2 or 3 days a week, you see, and I'd get paid by the hour. And that's what I'd been doing that for years and years.
Okay.
And then I started working at home on my own business. I didn't just give up the freelance work, you know. Of course, I was really, you know, I kept that going for 2 years, so I had both streams of income
right.
for 2 years, and then I actually, funnily enough, I had a moment like you getting told off for going in for late 4 minutes, you know. I had something like that happen to me, and that's when I said, "All right, that's it. I'm not going to do that anymore." So it's actually so the fact that I had that that buffer, that 2 year sort of thing that most people probably don't have, made it easier for me to find work via the internet. I didn't have to go around and knock doors, and so that's another reason why you should have done what you did, and it worked for you.
Yeah, well, there's a couple of things there. Firstly, if anyone was to ask me how to go about starting a web design business, I would highly recommend them not do what I do, unless they really want to be aggressive and just get started. And for me, that's where my head was at. I thought, you know, I don't want to be sitting in this cubicle for the next... Even if I sat there for 2 years or a year, I'd be so angry at myself.
Yes.
So I just wanted to get started. But the way you did it is much smarter because there was a smoother transition.
Yeah.
And that is definitely a smarter way to do it. But in saying that, you know, for people that are still in their full-time jobs and they want to get started, there are still ways to do it. Either get a part-time job or a casual position like I guess you were doing.
Or ask your employer if you can go part-time. People do that.
Yeah, you can do that. Or put in for annual leave. I was eligible, I think, for anywhere between 6 and 8 weeks. Being a government job, it's pretty cruisy, but for private institutions, it may be a little bit different. But even if you can get, say, 4 weeks might be pushing it, but even if you can get, say, 6 weeks, let's just say 4 weeks as an example. In 4 weeks, if you line up a client before you take that four-week break and then just go through the process of doing one site with one client, and then you've still got that safety net of going back to your job, so you're not desperate for cash like I was. So you can actually go through that process and say, hey, did I enjoy this? Is it really what I expected? Is it something that I want to do full time? So that's another way of, you know, sort of dipping in the toe without just bomb diving it like I did.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, another thing you did do was have work while you were working as well. You know, I think a lot of people do that. You know, you just work in the evenings and weekends on your own clients and hold down your own job. It's hard work, but I think a lot of people do it that way as well. It's a gives you another way of a smooth transition. But
yeah, I don't.
All these things help. Yeah,
I don't think I was doing any client work while I was still working. I was working. I was doing a lot of web design, but I was doing web design for myself. I was working on my own sites.
Absolutely about time now that I mention the web design business startup kit, because the reason I know you and the reason we're speaking now is because we both have products out there in a sort of similar area of this business of setting up and running a web design business. I really enjoyed reading it, as I said to you earlier, and really useful products for people to have. But I think it's about time we go on to them. It's so interesting because we have different experiences the way we came into this business, and we have similar experiences as well. You set up a web design business, and you came from the corporate world. You came from making very large web installations, etc. And you set up a methodology, and you've gone into it in incredible detail.
That's the corporate coming through.
Yeah, well, I think it stood you in good stead, because I love big corporate clients. You know, they are the best clients to get.
It's all funny money when you're dealing with government.
Oh, God, well, it's not their money, you know.
So a brochure website, five-page brochure website, 12,000? Sure, where do I sign? They're the sorts of clients you want. Touching on how it came about, my first client decided to go on a holiday towards the end of my towards the end of the project. So here I was. I chucked my job. I was desperate for cash. I landed a client. I thought everything was peachy. I got to the end of this project, and this guy went AWOL. I was like sending emails, trying to call, nothing. And I thought, what have I done? Because, you know, everyone told me, make sure you use contracts, make sure you use documents and so forth. And I was like, you know, this guy seems nice enough. I don't think I'll have any problems. You know, he had a nice smile and he gave me a nice firm handshake, and he assured me during the meeting that everything would be fine and dandy. And then here I find myself 3 weeks after having finished this guy's website not being paid, and I thought, this is horrible. Because I had no contracts, I had nothing in writing. It was all just a verbal agreement. So I thought, you know, this is where the government side of me kicked in. Because in government, I mean, you've only got to sneeze and you fill out paperwork. So I thought, right, I've got to get some contracts together. So I spent, weeks and weeks and weeks documenting contracts and putting them together. And then as a result of that, or while I was doing that, you know, and I was formatting them all, and I basically followed the same layout and format that I was familiar with within government. So I was quite familiar with documentation. So that helped big time. But while I was doing that, I was thinking to myself, you know, there has to be other freelancers out there that that need the same solution, that are in the same position and have this problem. So I thought, you know what, why don't I put this into some sort of product or something and see if I can maybe sell it online. I should probably note also at this time that I was just sort of getting a bit of a look into internet marketing and information-based products. So, you know, that all sort of tied together, and I thought, you know, maybe I should try and do something with these documents. And at that point, I only had about, I think, 9 documents, and I decided to sell these 9 documents for $79. So they started selling, and, you know, from there, I mean, back then I didn't even have an order form or anything, and people would make payment via PayPal, and I would just email the documents over, so it was pretty loose. But, you know, that's where it all started, my web design business startup kit. I mean, the Fast Start guide that goes with that is just me sharing my experiences and my knowledge with the buyer. So I coupled the Fast Start business guide with the contracts, put it all together, you know, and I've been selling that kit now for since 2009. So,
yeah.
And it's always well received. You know, people that buy it, I get such positive testimonials, you know, John, you saved me so much time, and this is, you know, fantastic, and blah, blah, blah. So.
Oh, that's great. Well, I tell you what I've thought about it is, you know, the detail that you go into, because it's not just contracts, it's just proposals, which I think is very important, and sign-off acceptance forms and things like that. And what I really loved about it is that, you know, you can just copy this text and send it off to your client when you're getting the website set up, and it's got all sorts of lovely things like, you know, this is the version of PHP and this is the version of MySQL we're using, and yeah, you know, the sort of things that I don't bother about, but it looks good.
Oh, absolutely.
To the client, and what the client wants is the client wants that peace of mind that they've given the job over to a proper organisation, which you are. And you don't get that situation of the one that you had, that you were alluding to earlier, with a dodgy client who just thinks you're some guy in your back bedroom and then feels okay about not paying you. I mean, they're never going to feel okay about not paying you when they've got all this official documentation.
No. And those documents, Rob, landed me a lot of projects just from the documents alone. I'd have clients say, you know, oh, we sat with a few other people, but your documentation, your proposal and your contracts and everything were just so professional that, you know, we decided to go with you. There's no need for them to know that you're just, you know, you're running a gig from home. I mean, I always met with clients in cafes, take my documentation along, and, you know, I landed a lot of jobs.
Oh, absolutely. I always meet clients in cafes and various venues throughout London that have internet connections, and it's the way people do business these days
Well, I couldn't bring them home anyway. the place I was living in was tiny, and I was like, oh, I can't bring anyone here. No one's going to take me seriously.
You just don't want to bring clients to your own house.
You know, freelance web designers probably aren't the most tidiest of people. I often at times think, right, I've got to stop here and just clean my desk. Because you know how you end up with just a little clean space at the front where you just enough room to type. And then there's this mound of, like, I don't know, paperwork and cups and I try and keep it under control.
You are making a pretty good description of my desk at the moment, actually, I have to say. Now that we're talking about your products, actually, so what I really enjoyed about it was the Freelance Web Design Business Startup Guide, which is an e-book. It's about, I don't know how many...
Yeah, it's just over 200 pages.
It is 200 pages,
yeah.
Isn't it? Yeah, it did take me a while to read.
I got a bit excited, didn't I?
Well, I really enjoyed reading that main sort of flagship PDF in the kit, where you talk about all these issues about clients. There's an awful lot in the PDFs that you've written about running a web design business.
Well, there is, and I like when I create an info product, I like to create real value for the buyer. I want it to have an impact, a positive impact on them. I mean, you probably know, just as most of us do, that when, you know, often you'll buy an e-book or something online and you'll download it and you'll spend the $27 and you get it and you go, oh, gee, you feel completely underwhelmed. I didn't want that for my product. So I really put everything into it. And I tried to cover... I mean, I'm not just filling this guide with fluff either. This is stuff that comes directly from experience, and it's actionable content. So it's stuff that you can actually implement immediately within your own web design business. So that was my intent, to just provide value. I really wasn't worried about the length of the book or how much I sold it for. I just wanted it to for people to read through it and say, oh, wow, this is going to help me out big time. That was my goal.
Yeah. I like to interview web designers that are making passive income in these podcasts, actually. All of the web designers so far do make passive income, and I think it's something that my readers are quite interested in, you know, not just working for clients, but also making passive income on the side and trying to grow that area of their business. But one thing I will say about products and info products is that if you sell it with a description and people buy it, then putting in a bonus one that they get that they're surprised and they've bought the products and they open it and there's a bonus there.
Yeah.
A bonus video, a bonus ebook or a collection of documents that they didn't know they were getting. Then that's you're under promising and over delivering, and that's a really good thing to do with info products.
Sure. I know when I first started looking at info products and sort of I became more involved within the internet marketing space, and I mean this is obvious with what I'm doing now. I'm actually doing less web design and I'm investing more of my efforts towards creating information-based products. So, but I'm still working in the web design space. And this is, I think, a limitation that most web designers have. They think, I'm working in web design, so I've got to build websites. If you take a look at what I'm doing, I mean, I'm still working within the web design space, but I'm not actually, I mean, I'm making income through providing products within that industry.
Mm.
So I think for freelancers, I mean, don't just get stuck down thinking that I've just got to build websites. I mean, I could talk for an hour and a half about different ways of creating income, but I won't do that to everyone. But yeah,
I can listen to you.
You really need to take a look around. I mean, and don't just limit yourself to just building websites. You know, there's training, there's consulting, there's auditing, there's software. I mean, you sit down at the computer, you fire up Dreamweaver or whatever application it is that you're using to create the website. So, you know, there's tools and services and products all within the web design industry that are all ways of generating passive income. And for me, passive income was extremely attractive because, you know, I at one point was selling content management systems designed for real estate agencies, and I actually wrote an article about this today. I was selling a content management system, and I probably spent about 6 weeks putting it together. But once I developed that system, I would then sell that system over and over and over. And this is what, you know, passive income is all about.
Yeah,
work once, get paid like nonstop, repeatedly.
Yeah,
Unlike web design, where you meet with a client, you go through their requirements, you build a site, you get paid. And and the cycle just goes around and around and around.
Yeah,
one client, one job,
and you've got to have a lot of, if you're just getting paid for websites, you've got to get a lot of clients to make a decent amount of money. You've got one website every week or two. You know, so it's very difficult.
So passive income for me was really attractive in that you do the job once and you get paid repeatedly. But I should probably stress for the listeners of this podcast that by no means chuck your web design stuff and run out and start creating info products, because it's a tough gig and you'll need to find a happy medium between providing services such as web design and offering, you know, info products or some other form of passive income.
Mm, yeah. Excellent advice there, John. Anything more you can say about the passive side is interesting for my readers. But I love the way that you get a job, you do it for your client, and then you use some of the documentation that you used, you know, for other people. You know, and it's nothing about copyright here, you know. It's kind of white label documentation. It's nothing to do with the, it doesn't do any harm to your original client at all. It's an excellent way of kind of killing two birds with one stone. That's a wrong expression.
I'm always thinking about monetization. How can I monetize this experience or even my knowledge? I made this mistake when I first started. Like, who would pay for my knowledge? Like, who cares? Like, how I got clients? But once I started sitting down and mapping it out, I mean, the sales all speak for themselves. I've sold hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of copies of this startup kit. So for freelancers, you know, think there's two two bits of advice. Think about how you can monetize your knowledge, because people out there will pay for it. And listen to the questions you're being asked, whether it's by friends, family, or clients. At some point, someone's going to say, you know, oh, I really wish that I had a blah, 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 or I wish there was a solution for, you know, X, Y, Z. These are all opportunities, so you've got to jump on them.
Yeah, yeah, good point. Good point. That isn't it? Somebody says, "Oh God," and you ask them, "What's wrong with your business at the moment?" Oh, I just can't get over this point where I can't find anyone to do this. You know, if somebody's saying that, that means thousands of people around the world have the same problem, and if you can find a solution, then you can possibly make passive income from it.
Absolutely.
And your first point about selling your knowledge and your thoughts about, God, why would anyone pay for my knowledge? And then sitting down and thinking about it and saying, well, actually, you know, it's really useful to be able to know how to find clients for a website or blah, blah, blah. You know?
A lot of the products that I've come up with have been accidents. I mean, the real estate content management system I was selling that for $19.97. And I was selling two or three copies of that a week. So, I mean, I had to go through the process of putting it together first. Yeah. So, you know, I went a long stretch without any money. But then once I had it in place, it was just bang, bang, bang. And as I said, that came about as an accident, because I had a real estate agent say, you know, we need a website for our real estate agency. Can you help us? Mm. You know, and I quoted the job and thought, man, this is huge what they're asking me here. This is like a $15,000 job. And I thought, I had time to think about it, which was good. I put the quote together on a Friday afternoon, and I had 2 days, Saturday and a Sunday, to let it sort of bounce around in my head. And I thought to myself, you know, how many other real estate agencies out there would need a solution like this? Why don't I go back and say, instead of, you know, $10,000 or $15,000, I'll do it for you for $1,500 or $2,000 if you let me sell this as a content management system solution to other real estate agencies. Yeah. So, you know, I'd created the content management system, and then I just outsourced the installation. So I hired someone to do the install for me for like $60. So the orders would come in. The orders would come in, and, you know, I'd just see the PayPal payment come in, and I'd get involved if I needed to, if I had to, and the installation would get done.
That's brilliant. That's absolutely excellent. The actual success stories in the States would be Chris Pearson and Brian Gardner, who are the creators of Thesis and Genesis. And that's another – they are web designers, and they've created WordPress – themes that are widely used. Thesis is ridiculous. I mean, it must have made him millions, basically. It's one of the most, and it's quite expensive. I mean, I don't know the different. There are different licenses you can buy, but I think the main license is $200 or something like that, and literally hundreds of thousands of Thesis websites out there, and.
But that shouldn't be a deterrent. I never thought at one point, oh, I can't do this because there's already too many other people doing it. I took my concept, and because, I mean, I already had people asking me for it. See, it's always easier to sell something that's already selling, or if there's demand for it. And this is, you know, I mean, I'm probably moving into the internet marketing space. Find the demand and then give them the solution rather than build something and then try and find customers.
You're talking about don't worry about competition. And I think that's a very good point as well, because one of my products is called Running a Web Design Business, and it's an ebook. And
I've got the Web Design Business Startup Kit, which is the base, the basic kit, and then I've got the Web Design Business Masters Kit, which also includes SEO contract templates.
Right, yeah. So we're in direct competition, if you like.
Yeah, but there's plenty of room for everyone, Rob.
That's what I'm saying. You know, I mean, we come at it from, you know, the products are so different, actually, mine and yours. Although we agree on a lot of issues about clients, etc., but our methods of finding clients. Well, our chapters about finding clients are very different. Is you have 40 ways, and I have one way.
I think I had 50. I wanted a nice round 50. Number. Yeah, it's actually a free guide. You can download it on my site. I thought 50 ways to find clients, and do you think I could come up with one last one? I was racking my brain. I got the 49. I thought, all right, forget it.
Stuck at 49. So
I did have 50, and my 50th one was, you know, put your web address across your behind and run naked up the street. You're bound to get some publicity there, but I figured, I should probably take that out.
Well, you might have some interest from the local police force, but no, it's true. I mean, look for the market and find a market that is vibrant and wants products, and yeah. Don't worry about the competition, because you are yourself, and you will always create an individual product that's going to be useful to someone, because your experience is unique, and so your product will be unique.
That's right, and there's plenty of room for everyone. I don't sweat it too much when it comes to competition. You know, everyone's out to make a dollar. We're all trying to achieve the same thing. I think there's plenty of room for everyone, so, you know, to each their own.
Fantastic. Well, what advice would you give someone who's starting or running a web design business?
Okay, I'll give some advice based upon what I did in order to make it work. Mm-hmm. If you want to get started, you've got to just make the decision to get started. It's really that simple. Mm-hmm. Don't be as reckless as I was. And think about the suggestions that I made earlier, either getting a part-time job or taking annual leave so that you've got some form of income while you're testing the waters. Let's see, what else can I suggest? Another point would be to make sure that you, if possible, clear your debts. When you go into this business, it can be hit and miss. You can have 5 clients 1 month and you can have none the next. The income will be all over the place, so expect that. I, through reading Rich Dad, Poor Dad and the Cashflow Quadrant, just went on this rampage, just clearing all of my debts. I sold everything that was a liability. I bought a cheap 4-cylinder small car that I could just barely fit into. And I cleared my debts, and I guess my main point here is not only clear debts, but live cheap, because you're going to have to at first, until, you know, it depends on how big you want to scale the business, if you want to have an agency with 20 employees or if you're just going to freelance. But if you're just going to freelance, you've got to do without the $800 iPhone and the, you know, expensive dinners and the fancy car. You've got to live cheap. Oh. It's super critical. And, you know, that probably touches on, I mean, when I first started, I was on 64K dial-up. I think I had an old Pentium 133. I had a ex-government CRT monitor. And a pen and a pad, but I had a lot of determination. So, you know, in saying that, living cheap, reduce your expenses. Don't run out and spend, you know, thousands of dollars on 30-inch monitors and a fancy desk and a $800 leather chair. Like, none of your clients care. All they want is their website developed. So, and all of these things, if you start accumulating all of these expenses, it's just going to make the experience much less enjoyable and more stressful.
Yeah, that's good advice. Actually, I'm gonna take some things out of the book in your product that I really liked, and because as I mentioned, it's 200 pages long, and there's. Well, this isn't the whole product. This is just one book inside the product. And there were a lot of things that I thought, oh, my God, that's a good idea. I was telling you about these the other day when we were chatting. Oh, yeah. But, you know, first of
priority
all...
Priority search
ones. Ah, you took the words right out of my mouth.
Priority search ones, yes. Yep. That one,
priority surge hazard.
You know,
love that one. What? Explain that to
us. Well, I kept getting smashed, as most freelancers could, would understand. Like the phone would ring, or I'd get an email. Oh man, you know, John, I need this like now. I've got to have this by tomorrow. I've got it importing. Yeah. You know, we've got shareholders coming around, or you know,
yeah. What time is it? Oh God.
Yeah, it's like, you know,
11 o'clock at night.
I remember getting phone calls at like 11:30 on a Saturday night. Oh, you know, something wrong with our email. Do you think you could give us a hand, like trying to like walk someone through over the phone troubleshooting an email account? It's like no. So you know, I implemented that priority surcharge, and that'll do one of two things. Firstly, it'll stop them from you know throwing stuff under your nose the last minute.
Yeah.
And two, if they decide to go ahead, it'll be worth your while. I think I had a priority
search. So you charge double?
No, I add 35% on top of my 35%. Normal hourly rate. But, I mean, that's just my figure anyway.
Yep.
You can set it to whatever you want.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's just for, I guess, what are they? They've got those surcharges or whatever it is. You go to a restaurant or cafe on a public holiday and they charge more, so...
Yeah, absolutely. No, yeah. I think that's it's a good way of making people respect the profession.
Yeah.
You know, if they're phoning you up at 11:30, you know, they're obviously treating you like some sort of janitor, some sort of night porter, and not you know, would they phone up their solicitor and expect
well, that's right.
them to?
That's right.
You know,
I'll give another quick bit of advice. When you're working as a freelancer, don't make it overly known to the client. Try and keep it as professional as possible, but still be friendly. But I found a few times I found myself involved in conversations where I was like, oh, wow, you know, Greg, I had a huge weekend, you know, bachelor's party, and I woke up on Monday with a bit of a hangover. And that's all well and good if the project goes according to plan. But if things go pear-shaped... They will use that against you. So just be careful what you say and don't get too palsy-walsy with clients because they can throw that at you.
Yeah, I agree with that. You're not in the business to make friends. Mm. I mean, the client, you've got to be professional with clients.
So
that's a great advice.
Yeah, try and keep your personal stuff out of it. That has happened to me. John, you know, you want to charge me this priority surcharge, but you had time to go to that, you know, music festival on Sunday. Like, you know, come on.
So, very, very good. Very good advice. I've got some more here. You've got your late payment charge. I do that as well. Very good idea. Charge them a bit. You know, if they're over a month, you charge them interest.
And you've got to be sure to include that within your contract.
In the contract, absolutely.
And I'll just give you another quick tip. When you give the client the contract, make sure you get it signed and dated. But in addition to that, get them to initial each page.
Oh, wow.
I picked up that tip from the real estate industry because I bought and sold a few properties. And each time I go and sign, you know, mortgage papers or whatever, they'd say, oh, you've got to initial each page. And I was like, why? And they're like, well, that way you can't come back later and say, hey, that page wasn't there or I missed it or I didn't see that. So get the client to initial each page.
Fantastic. Okay. Another thing that that's very good, you're very strong on, is adding additional features to a project. So a client comes to you and says, I want a website.
Oh, yeah. Scope creep.
And, scope creep. But making sure you get paid for them if it does indeed creep.
Yeah, that touches on, and see, this is the government side of me coming out again. Scope creep was a big problem in state government when I was working there because, you know, you'd have all these big wigs sit around a table and what would be planned out to take 6 months would drag on for 3 years and you know, the budget would blow out. So it's, I was, you know, that was something that came about quite often. And you'll get a lot of that, you know, in meetings. Oh, can you just add that in, John? Can we just add that in? Like, it shouldn't be too much harder to just add that in. It shouldn't take too long. You know? So that should be included in your contract under exclusions, okay? So you have your deliverables and your inclusions, but also list your exclusions. That's probably just as important as your inclusion. So what's not included? And I made my best efforts to say, hey, you know, I'm not going to be setting up servers. I'm not going to be setting up email accounts. I'm not going to be coming into the office and doing, you know, hands-on training. These are all things that if you need, I'm either one, not going to do them at all, or two, they're not included in this initial agreement. And, you know, if we do go ahead with them, it's going to cost you more.
Yeah, that's the important thing, because if they want them, then they are prepared to pay for them. But as long as it's not included in the original fee that you agreed upon, and you can make it an hourly rate.
That's right.
You know, if they want it.
That's right. So for those for those little add-ons, I would use my work order form, which is included in the Web Design Business Startup Kit. So, like a last-minute thing or a change or something, I wouldn't go back and redo the entire proposal and contract. What I would do is I would say, let's just finish the project that we agreed upon, then we'll revisit this stuff after and do it as additional work, unless it tied in with something that was, you know, like a chain reaction. This had to be done first in order to complete that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think this is all excellent value for my listeners, hopefully. But I think it's time now, John, if I hand over to you and you can tell everyone where they can find you and tell them about the products.
Sure. You can find me at, firstly...
You've got to think about it, haven't you?
Yeah, well, I was just thinking, like, don't Google my name. You'll probably find me at mugshots.com. No, I'm just kidding. No, you can find me at webdesignbusinesskits.com. And from there, I list all of my products, my Web Design Business Startup Kit, which is $79. My Web Design Business Masters Kit, if you're providing SEO in addition to web design, that one sells for $147. I've also got an entry-level kit, which just includes, you know, the essential contracts to get you started, which sells for $37. That's the Web Design Starter Kit. So for your listeners, if they want to find me, they want to take a look at my stuff, head over to webdesignbusinesskits.com.
Yeah, webdesignbusinesskits.com, and there's a video of you there. You also have a YouTube.
I do weekly videos. I call them Freelancing Friday. They're just... You got some noise there.
There's... they're gritting the roads.
As you do. I do weekly videos, Freelancing Friday. They're called Freelancing Friday, and I basically answer questions that are sent in by my subscribers. So these are all freelancers in the industry. They send their questions over, and I shoot short videos every Friday. So, I mean, if anyone's interested in that, they can do just subscribe on webdesignbusinesskits.com.
You can get a free sample of the Web Design Business Startup Kit if you subscribe at the website. But I really enjoy your videos. Yeah, there's been three come past. It's snow. Oh. They're literally putting grit and salt on the roads.
You need a big red flashing sign outside. Quiet on air.
Yes. Podcast. Yeah. I am interviewing John Romain. That's great, John. Is there anything else you'd like to say?
It's been a pleasure, Rob. Thanks so much for having me. Hey, and maybe we can do another podcast soon. And
I'd love that, because I can put you in the hot seat. Oh, right. Ah, the tables are turning. that would be a pleasure as well. Now, I've got a lot of value for this time. I really appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun actually hooking up with you on Skype and Facebook over the last week or so.
We're hopeless at keeping appointments, but we got there.
Yeah, we got there in the end. Hopefully it's all been recorded. Thank you very much, John. Thank you so much.
My pleasure, Rob, and I hope the listeners enjoy the content.